I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, President Donald Trump is famous for escaping accountability. For example, his 31 charges of violating the Espionage Act for hoarding national defense secrets at Mar-a-Lago vanished when he was reelected. But one case stuck, and Trump lost, and he keeps losing, in the sexual assault and defamation case of E. Jean Carroll. Journalist and humorist Carroll, with her fearless, skillful attorney, Roberta Kaplan, beat Trump and his team of tough lawyers. How did they do it? Carroll has written a funny and daring behind-the-scenes account in the book called Not My Type. But the story isn't just about beating Trump. It's also an examination of how women frequently are demonized, dismissed, and shamed for coming forward after a sexual assault. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Are you ready to amplify your impact through workplace giving? Many employers match donations, doubling or even tripling your support for TPR's local and global programming. Some employers even match gifts from retirees and spouses, so your contribution can go even further. Check if your company participates today by visiting tpr.org/workplacegiving.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. She's not my type. That's what Donald Trump said about E. Jean Carroll as a way to defend himself from the then allegation that he had sexually assaulted Carroll in a store's dressing room in 1996. Trump was eventually found guilty of that sexual assault and defaming Carroll. But in typical Carroll jiu-jitsu, she has grabbed that comment, she's not my type, and she is claiming it. It is the title of her recently published book, Not My Type, One Woman Versus a President. It is a funny recounting of the behind-the-scenes events of that trial. E. Jean Carroll joins us, and as a spectacular bonus, we are also joined by her attorney, Roberta Kaplan. And welcome to The Source, both y'all. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. What a wonderful introduction. And you could not have put it better, Mr. Davies, when you say we have the great favor of probably one of the great minds of her generation, my attorney, Robbie Kaplan.
Well, call me Dave, and Robbie, I got some legal stuff to ask you. But first off, E. Jean, why did you seize on that phrase?
Well, you know, it's thank you for Dave. I tell you, it's what used to be said if somebody wanted to fix you up with a stranger, shows you the stranger's picture, and in order to be nice and kind, you would reply, oh, I'm sorry, he's just not my type. And that would explain why a romantic adventure was not in the future. And Donald Trump took this kind expression, which has helped people for hundreds of years explain why they don't like a certain person. He took it and used it to humiliate me and to signal that it could never have happened. What I said had happened in Bergdorf's. And then we saw what happened to that. Robbie Kaplan took that phrase and used it against him in the deposition.
Yeah, so Robbie, that phrase, not my type, became his undoing with the photograph. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so probably the single moment in the case that had the greatest impact on our victory was during Donald Trump's deposition in some video footage that has now become famous, at his deposition in Mar-a-Lago. And just in the course of the deposition, I was kind of asking him background questions about whether he knew E. Jean and how he could have known E. Jean. And he said, yeah, I don't really know her, never met her, nothing. But I think there's a photo of us at some charity event. And so quite genuinely, so I pulled out the photo and I showed it to him. I said, I think we have the photo. And I showed it to him, and he immediately pointed at Eugene and said, "That's Marla." I said, "Marla who?" He said, "My wife at the time, Marla Maples." And then he tried to get out of it with help from his attorney, Alita Hava, by saying, "Oh, the photo is blurry." But the photo wasn't at all blurry. And later in the deposition, I got Donald Trump to acknowledge that all of his former wives were definitely his type. So that kind of sealed the knot right there.
I'm going to play a piece of tape. This is Donald Trump after the verdict, where he presents to the public his side of things. And we're going to listen to it, and we can talk about it on the other side.
What else can you expect from a Trump-hating, Clinton-appointed judge who went out of his way to make sure that the result of this trial was as negative as it could possibly be, speaking to and in control of a jury from an anti-Trump area, which is probably the worst place in the United States for me to get a fair trial? We'll be appealing this decision. It's a disgrace. I don't even know who this woman is. I have no idea who she is, where she came from. This is another scam. It's a political witch hunt. And somehow we're going to have to fight this stuff. We cannot let our country go into this abyss. This is disgraceful. You have somebody running for office. You have a woman that's financed and lied about it. She totally lied about it by Democrat operatives, like just about the biggest one there is. And she said that wasn't true. They found that she lied about it, and the judge wasn't even, I guess, letting it be put in as evidence. The whole thing is a scam, and it's a shame, and it's a disgrace to our country.
So Trump says they're appealing, and those appeals have so far not had the result that he wants. Robbie?
I lost you.
Okay.
You guys hear me? Sorry, I lost you for a second.
Yeah, so the appeals have not gone the way that he wants them to go. He's lost the appeals.
So far, correct.
He's
it's a clean sweep, Dave. A clean sweep. And I want your wonderful listeners, and it's great to be talking to the people in Texas. Texas is one of the great states. And I will be interested to hear what your listeners had to say. But Robbie is being too laid back. When we say clean sweep, we are talking about at a time when nobody can figure out how and what to do and how to fight, how to resist Donald Trump. Here is an 80-year-old woman with a spectacular attorney who has beaten Donald Trump twice. No one else has done this ever. So the secret to beating Donald Trump is in this book, where I lay out step by step by step how we did it. So that's the interesting thing about this clean sweep of two unanimous jury trials, two unanimous votes by the United States Court of Appeals, and the woman responsible for all this clean sweep is Robbie Kaplan.
Robbie, Trump says he's taking this to the U.S. Supreme Court. This is not something that the SCOTUS would take up. But I wonder about, you know, the shadow docket, the vassal Supreme Court is capable of surprising things. Any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there are two separate appeals that are likely to be taken up to the Supreme Court. The first appeal is on the original trial, the $5 million verdict. Trump has already request an extension and receive one from the Supreme Court to appeal that. I think it's extremely unlikely, given the issues that he appealed, that it's an issue that the Supreme Court would take. It's not an issue of nationwide import. There's no split in the circuits about any of these issues. I'm pretty comfortable that they will not accept that case for certiorari. The second case has some complicated legal issues about presidential immunity and the Westfall Act, which is when the government waives sovereign immunity for torts. There, too, Trump has a big problem because the courts have held now multiple times that he waived both of those arguments. So for those reasons, typically the Supreme Court does not take a case where the argument's already been waived. So I think that one is also unlikely.
We got to take a break here. We got to take a break. We're going to pick up where we left off. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. 1 minute. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With us is E. Jean Carroll. Her book is Not My Type, One Woman Versus a President. We're also joined by her powerhouse attorney, Rebetta Kaplan. Got a question? You got a comment? Give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. It was late yesterday, that Donald Trump announced he is now suing the New York Times and some reporters for a book that he says defames him. And Trump has made doing quite well in these lawsuits against media companies, ABC, NBC. And also he sued ABC's parent company, Walt Disney. They paid $16 million to settle Trump's suit over misstatements that were made by George Stephanopoulos. That misstatement was about you, E. Jean Carroll, where Stephanopoulos said that Trump had was found guilty of rape in that case. Robbie, what is wrong with George Stephanopoulos saying that Trump was found guilty of rape in that case?
Oh, the judge in that case, in our case, held that New York had a very peculiar law for sexual assault. And the only thing that was officially, at least in the past, they've changed it, they fixed it, but that was denominated as rape under New York law at the time was a very limited way of sexually assaulting someone. I'm not going to get into graphics here. But Judge Kaplan held that in the colloquial understanding and meaning of the term rape, the jury did hold that Donald Trump had raped E. Jean. And I think the reason you're seeing these cases aren't losing in court. Media companies aren't losing in court. They're settling. And the reason they're settling is because they want to avoid the recording that you just played for the listeners before the break of Donald Trump kind of lambasting E. Jean Carroll. And from E. Jean Carroll's perspective, there's a point of settling. He's already done that to her dozens and dozens of times. So no incentive on our end to settle. And those cases, again, are settling. They're not losing on the legal merits.
Yeah, and I just want to say to those great giant universities and corporations who are bending the knee to Donald Trump, they are crawling like worms. There is nothing to be afraid of. The thought police in this country is so, it's a cloud that hangs over the whole country. And so this is why it's so, you know, such an enormous feat that Robbie Kaplan has pulled off here. Two major wins over Donald Trump. When the big universities are crumbling, when giant corporations are crawling, this is more and more and more outstanding. I sit back with my mouth hanging open at the cowardice of the major corporations and the universities and the big entertainment studios. I sit back with my mouth hanging open. If I, an 81-year-old woman, can do it, why can't these big companies do it? Why? I realize that they don't have Robbie Kaplan, but Why? Dave, do any of your listeners know why? I cannot figure it out. And I think Robbie is puzzled by it, too. Aren't you puzzled, Robbie? I'm not sure if you're puzzled by it.
I'm puzzled. I'm most puzzled, Eugene. I'm most puzzled by the fact that you have to compliment me every other line. If you don't stop it, I'm not
going to but, you know, it's good. No, we got, you know, I rarely get the advantage of talking to people in Texas, so I want them to know.
All right. Well, we're going to take a caller right now. The number is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Henrietta. Henrietta, you are on the air with Eugene Carroll. Go ahead.
Well, yes. All I want to do is thank her because he tried to drag her to the mud and was not successful. And my reply to her is why they decided to settle is because they would have to be paying lawyers, and then the fight, and then what he wants, and keep doing it, and it would have never ended. So it was easier to shut him up, fine, once and for all. And that's why they did it.
All right, Henrietta, thank you for that. I don't think they did shut up him once and for all because we just filed another lawsuit very similar to this. But these lawsuits do have a chilling effect. I know that, you know, in talking about what happened to you, Eugene, I have to be very careful about the words that I choose because, you know, you don't want to be hit with all that stuff.
Well, Dave, let's talk about this. What's this thought police thing going on in the country? Everybody is being super, 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 super careful about their words, when in fact, the opposite is what should be going on in America right now. Don't we all have free speech? I think we do, and I think we've got to start exercising it. Look, I wrote an entire book. Do you hear one peep out of Donald Trump? No. No, an entire book about two trials and Donald Trump. Not a syllable. Why? Because I had court transcripts, deposition transcripts. I had every fact absolutely straight. So I think we can practice our free speech in this country if we keep our facts straight. I'm really appalled about everybody being so careful of Donald Trump, really, an old, overweight man who wears apricot makeup. I don't find him so scary.
Now, you're saying he's not making a peep now, but that was not the case during the trial. Eugene, he was, as you describe him, was making a lot of noises. He was not supposed to be making noises, but he was. Talk about that. Describe what he was doing when he was in the courtroom.
One time he published over 40 times during the trial. 40 times during the trial.
He tweeted during the trial.
Yeah, 40 times during the trial on one day. And then after the trial, after the day's proceedings, which was one of the highlights of the day, he would go out and stand in a hallway that was lined on both sides with American flags and then give America his version of what went on in court that day.
Well, he would say things like, I'm the one that should be getting damages.
I'm the one who suffered. I'm the one who deserves damages. It was Saint Sebastian. Tied to a tree and shot with arrows, could not have competed with Donald Trump. He was a pathetic old guy who's calling himself the victim. This is who people in this country are afraid of. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. And Robbie, by the way, just dealt with him in her closing argument, Dave, which was famous. She drove Donald Trump so crazy about his bad behavior in court, drove the man so crazy, Dave, that in the middle of her closing argument, Trump, with the steam coming out his ears and off the top of his fake hair, stormed out of court during her argument. And that was, you know what? When you run away in the middle of a closing argument, isn't that something that you do when you're guilty, not when you're innocent? And so when he stood up and walked out, I knew we were going to win. I just knew it.
But during the trial, the testimony, President Trump was there and he would make a lot of noises like gasping or making – he was just not a stoic presence, I would imagine.
Oh, my God, the jury. The jury was mesmerized by him. He grunted, he moaned, he complained, he bitched, he growled. He was really, really Robbie had to stand up and object to Judge Kaplan because we could hear everything he was saying. He was saying, I've never met the woman. I don't know who she is. And he was snarling at Alina Haba Esquire, his attorney, and telling her to stand up when she had no idea why she should stand up. And so Robbie had to complain to the judge several times about, and he was doing it right in front of the jury, right in front. So I don't think it's a good look for a man to be treating a woman, his defense attorney, the way he treated Alina Haba Esquire in front of the jury, telling her what to do, snarling and spitting. It was it was riveting, and Robbie complained about it, but I think it worked in our favor. What do you think, Dave? Do you think that would work in your favor?
I don't have opinions. I don't know. Let's go to a caller. Let's go to Linda. And Linda, you're on the air.
Okay. Well, to start off, I want to really thank you, Eugene, for writing the book. I just finished the audio book, so hearing your voice is just fantastic again. I'm an ex-Brand of Air hostess and retired behavior teacher who I helped set up the alternative behavior programs in the state of Texas for Farmers Branch. I also had a business in Farmers Branch, and I stood up at the time. I was the first to speak at City Hall against Tim O'Hare in 06. And this was a precursor to Trump. It was the rise of the Tea Party. It was they tried to pass illegal immigration ordinance that was dividing. It did divide the town, and it still resonates from that. So I really want to thank you and stress the importance of using our voices assertively to set an example for the next generation coming up.
Linda, thank you for your call. Eugene Carroll, your response.
Well, I'm thrilled to talk to a Braniff airline attendant because you wore those fantastic outfits on the Braniff planes from the Halston. Halston dressed the attendants on Braniff Airways, and it was we actually have one of our witnesses was on a Braniff flight when Trump assaulted her. Right, Robbie? Jessica Leeds.
I think that's right.
Yeah, she was on a Braniff.
She was definitely on a flight. I think it was Braniff.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting that we got a call from a Braniff flight attendant.
Didn't Trump's attorneys defend themselves against that allegation by saying there was no law about sexual assault in an airplane?
Robbie?
That is what they argued, but the problem for them is that there was a statute at the time that prohibited assault on airplanes. And courts had already determined by that point when men assaulted women on planes in places that one would consider sexual, that was a violation of the plain old assault statute.
But what kind of defense is that? That, you know, it wasn't against the law to sexually assault a woman in the air because they were under the impression that there was no law against it. Still, that's still like, well, I mean, it's still wrong, isn't it?
It's not the greatest argument to begin with. I would agree with you on that, Dave.
Dave, I wish you could have heard Robbie arguing that very point in front of the United States Court of Appeals. She actually said, "Your Honors, this is a case of having too many lawyers argue." Remember? And then she laid Trump's lawyers flat with that very argument that she just gave about it not being a crime to assault a woman on a flight in 1979. It was brilliant.
We're taking another break. Ned, I'll get you on the air when we come back. Our phone lines are open. If you want to jump in the conversation, we'd love to have you. 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. Donald Trump owes E. Jean Carroll about $90 million. What is that money? What's going to happen to that money? Carroll's got some ideas. We'll find out more. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. E. Jean Carroll is with us on the line and her powerhouse attorney, Roberta Kaplan. E. Jean's new book is Not My Type, One Woman Versus a President. It is an inside look, a hilarious look at the absurdities behind the scenes, but also the gravity of it all as she was taken on Donald Trump and she won. You can call in with a question, a comment, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Ned. And Ned, you're on the air with E. Jean Carroll.
Hi, I have a comment and then a question. The comment is, we seem to have rights, but only if you have a lawyer to defend them, and lawyers are expensive. It seems like even if you win with these seemingly endless appeals, it takes forever. You were awarded $5 million many, many years ago. Did you ever get that money, or how long did it take to receive it?
All right, Ned, thank you for that. And then she was awarded, was it $89 million in the defamation? What's the status on the money, E. Jean Carroll?
Well, Robbie can explain what the status is. I have plans for the money, but let's have Robbie.
So you have not gotten the check yet, then?
Not yet.
So, Robbie, when's that coming? Is it in the mail? The check's in the mail?
No, that's correct. E. Jean hasn't even gotten a nickel so far. On the original verdict, the first verdict of $5 million, I think we're much closer to her getting the check there. Donald Trump deposited the money with the court, so the court is holding the money. And once the Supreme Court denies their petition for certiorari, then E. Jean will get that. The larger verdict, the $83 million verdict, is somewhat slower. We're probably 6 months to a year behind on that case, given where it is in the appellate process.
So
this is not unusual. You know, yeah. It takes in cases that are awarded money. This is not that unusual, is it, Robbie?
Not at all, unfortunately.
Not at
the
all.
The only good thing is that E. Jean is earning interest on that money. As she waits for it.
Yeah.
So, E. Jean, what are your plans if and when you do get that check?
Well, the lawyers get a really juicy chunk of it because they have worked hard, and the lawyers are the best in the country, and they deserve a large proportion of this. The rest of it, because Donald Trump so loves his money and the things that money stands for, I'm going to take that money he is given to me, and I'm going to give it to everything Donald Trump hates. That's my plan.
Well, may I make a suggestion?
Yes, please. I'm open to suggestions, and any suggestions your listeners have.
Have you thought about the E. Jean Carroll Journalism Award for...
Oh.
For humorous coverage of, rights or sexual assault or something like that.
I love it. No, I had never thought of that, Dave. This is a good idea.
So the National Press Club would be happy to do all the work for you.
Oh.
All you have to do is just provide the endowment and write down what your wishes would be. And for, journalists who write about these things. And, believe it or not, reporters do look at, like, what are the awards out there? What can I do? It does shape coverage, and it does recognize great coverage in these types of areas that you want to focus on.
I love it, Dave. I was impressed that you knew immediately about the argument in the Second Circuit about the woman being attacked, Jessica Leeds being attacked. I noticed that you had that deal right at your fingertips. I was very impressed with that. So I got to say, you are in the running for this award. So there you go. All right. I like the idea.
So, Robbie Kaplan, I do want to ask you about other notable cases that you have been, leaders in as an attorney, particularly when it comes to the right of marriage equality in the United States. And so you were successfully argued United States v. Windsor before the U.S. Supreme Court. And so we are concerned that the Supreme Court is going to try to do a 180 turn on that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so Tim Davis has filed a petition for certiorari seeking to have the court reconsider Windsor and Obergefell, which was 2 years later, which were the cases that led to nationwide marriage equality. Dave, no one would ever accuse me of being a hopeless optimist. I don't think anyone who knows me would ever describe me that way. But on this particular issue, I feel hopeful and pretty comfortable that the Supreme Court will not revisit those decisions in any fundamental way. And the reason is that because when the Supreme Court decides whether to take a case and whether to overrule a prior precedent, one of the interests it has to look at is the reliance interest of the people in the country who have relied on that ruling and how that shaped their lives. And when it comes to marriage equality, it's hard to think of a single issue that has a greater reliance interest. Not only are there married lesbians and gay men all over the country, but many of them have children. And I don't think the Supreme Court has the stomach. I hope they don't have the stomach to reverse all that. It would just have a devastating consequence on millions of people.
Eugene Carroll, I want to ask you about one of the main characters in your book, Alina Haba Esquire. You call her Alina Haba Esquire throughout the entire book. Why did you do that?
Alina Haba Esquire is a spectacular woman. I mean, she is beautiful. She is confident. She's very bright. She didn't know diddly squat about the law. And she was a great admirer, secret admirer of Robbie Kaplan. And before and after court, Alina Haba was always sort of trying to get Robbie's attention and gain Robbie's respect. It was very strange. It was a very strange phenomenon. She wanted to earn Robbie Kaplan's respect. She liked Robbie Kaplan. She wanted to be Robbie Kaplan. And then she would go into the courtroom and say these outrageously dumb things to Judge Kaplan. And
no to relation to Robbie. There's different people.
Yes. And it was rattling to watch somebody who could divide herself like that to earn Robbie's respect and then to attack Robbie when she... So... Right now, she's the acting attorney general in New Jersey, and that entire state now, I don't know if your Texas viewers understand what's going on, but the entire state now of New Jersey cannot hear cases because Robbie, explain why.
So when we say she is the acting U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey, the word acting is doing a lot of work right there.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. Yes.
So any documents that she signs as the U.S. attorney are no longer considered valid.
Boy, you really have done your research. Jeez Louise.
A district court judge has held that her appointment and her current position was inappropriate and not lawful. That's going to be set to appeal, but that's the current status.
Yeah.
So, but she even had trouble submitting evidence in the courtroom in the trial. She said, "Well, you could," and the judge told her, "Can you go off and figure out how to properly submit evidence?" And then she did that, and then she would strut around the courtroom as if she was the rooster whose crow brought up the sun.
Yeah, that's exactly it. She was. You've seen the high school majorette leading the band of 20 members strutting. That's Selena Hava. She's she. You know what? She could spellbind a jury. She was very confident in her speech. It's just that she was defending a criminal, Donald Trump, and her arguments. She, as the judge Kaplan pointed out, you have just seen Robbie Kaplan introduced 56 documents into evidence in under three hours. I think you should go take a break and learn how to introduce at least one. So she had watched Robbie introduce 56 documents in under 3 hours, and she still couldn't figure out how to do it. She learned how to do it, and when she did it, oh, my God, she was so full of herself that she introduced a document in court. But listen, I don't want to leave the impression that Alina Haba Esquire is not a powerful woman, and I would tell everyone in the United States to watch out. She is going to run for office. She is in everyone's future for the next 20 or 30 years, and so get used to Alina Haba Esquire. That is a woman who will always be on a stage. Do you agree, Robbie? I'm not sure. You think she's not going to be quiet?
I know Alina. I'm sure she will have a legal career for many, many more years.
Yeah. When she was appointed the acting U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey, she pledged that she would turn New Jersey red, which is not the appropriate role for a U.S. attorney. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And when I come back, Carol, I want to ask you about the exchange, one of the first exchanges, or if not the first exchange that you had with Haba about when she asked you in the deposition about how many men you slept with and what that and how you turned that around, how you owned that also. And that's incredible. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're speaking with E. Jean Carroll and also her powerhouse attorney, Rebetta Kaplan. Her book is Not My Type, One Woman Versus a President. So, Eugene, when you start off the book, we go straight to the scene where Haba is asking you how many men you have slept with over the course of your life. So this was opening salvo. This set the tone. This is probably something that they had workshopped and said, this is going to get her. Okay, guys, what do you think about this question? Oh, this is going to be awesome. Oh, I can't wait to see her face when you ask her that question. And, Eugene, it sounds like, according to your book, that you did not shrink. You did not demur. You were not like, oh, my gosh, how dare you ask me that? You really just took it and you owned it. Tell me about that.
Oh, Dave, if there's one thing I love talking about, it's my lovers, of course. It was the only tolerable 20 minutes in the entire deposition. And one of the juiciest bits was Robbie Kaplan sitting next to me, because we had not prepared for this question, rocking forward and back in her chair and running Google search on the men I was talking about. And in the middle of the deposition, Robbie Kaplan shouts out, Dumbledore!
What does that mean? Explain.
Because, unfortunately, the people in the room were too young to even know who one of my lovers was, who is Richard Harris, the great actor, nominated for several Academy Awards. And one of his last roles was, as Robbie announced to the room, Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies. So that was one of the high points. I'm telling you, the deposition was a horrible, horrible, painful. It was horrible to sit and listen to Ahava's questions. It was painful to have to answer them. And then we hit my lovers. And it was like, thank God I'm alive. Because, so it was just fun to watch Robbie's reaction.
Well, Robbie, let me ask you, why wasn't that question put to Donald Trump?
Oh.
It wasn't a proper question. Let me give it. It's not an appropriate question under the rules of evidence to ask Eugene those questions. The general rule at depositions is you can ask questions that are improper, and then at trial they don't get it. So I knew that Judge Kaplan, who, by the way, was not my mentor, there's no relation. Kaplan is like the Jewish version of Jones Smith, so that's why his name is Kaplan. Judge Kaplan would never admit it. And so I let Eugene answer the questions. But as she testified and started talking about Richard Harris and Ben Vereen and everyone else, a guy I think who won the Olympics in swimming, I remember thinking to myself, this is actually very good testimony because it shows that at the time this happened, which was spring of 1996, Donald Trump, to use a favorite expression, was not Eugene's type. And she would have had no interest in dating Donald Trump then or ever.
There's a big difference for not being my type for dating and not being my type for sexual assault. And I just think that he using that as a defense that she was not worthy of my attention for sexual assault is, gross.
Yeah, gross. I agree.
Why don't you think the verdicts – Robbie, go ahead.
Unfortunately, again, federal law confirms that. But our law has concluded that it's gross, too. But people get away with stuff at depositions that they can never get away with in court.
Eugene Carroll, why do you think the verdicts, guilty against Donald Trump, sexual assault, why didn't that impact Donald Trump's political career?
Because people don't know that he has been held liable for sexual assault. They do not know it. It's not in their Facebook feeds. Also, I am not the only one who's accused Donald Trump. He has been accused, credibly accused, by at least a dozen women. Some people say 24 women. Some people say 48 women. But in the Republican Party, they don't care about adult women because adult women have careers and adult women speak out. So they don't want to hear or even know about those women. The kind of women that the Republican Party is most interested in are 15-year-old girls who have fallen and who are victims. That's who Trump and the people who surround Trump and the Republican Party, that's the kind of women they care about.
When you say they care about, I mean, let's talk about Jeffrey Epstein.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So what do you mean they care about them? They care about them, what, they're trying to protect them?
They really want to protect them. They think it's terrible. They think sex trafficking is terrible with 15-year-old victims. They only are saying that because these are not adult women who speak out and who have agency on their own and who call Donald Trump on his crimes. These women have not spoken out. They have been quiet. They have been 15 years old. They have been fallen women. And that's the kind of women the Republican Party adores.
Eugene, did you have any, personal awareness of Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump? Did you run in those circles?
No, but certainly the women as a journalist, I've covered women who have accused Donald Trump. And Jill Harth put on something called the Calendar Girls in the early 90s, and she stayed with the Calendar Girls young women. They were all very young women, very beauty queens. They stayed at Mar-a-Lago, and Jeffrey Epstein was there, and Trump and Epstein took the young girls on a tour of Mar-a-Lago. They did not behave well, so I became aware of the Epstein connection way afterwards.
So we, earlier in the program, we heard the comments from Donald Trump defending himself and saying that this case was, you know, not, he didn't like it, saying that this jury was, you know, tainted because they were from New York City. Robbie, can you clarify that? Is that true?
Yeah, no, I think those comments, you can correct me, Dave, were made after the first trial.
Yes, correct.
And the jury, there wasn't a single, to my great regret, there wasn't a single juror on the jury in the first trial who lived within New York City. I think there was one or two from Westchester, and everyone else lived really in Trump country, majority Trump districts north of Westchester, Orange, Dutchess, et cetera. So it was not the jury he described it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so him saying, well, I'll never get a fair trial in New York City, this was not a New York City jury.
No.
This was, you know, redder parts of New York State.
Yeah, it was upstate. Correct. Upstate.
So, Eugene Carroll, a survivor of sexual assault, and your story of being victorious in being holding your attacker accountable, I mean, I know you did not, you deliberately had to figure out that you were not going to represent all women in the trial. This was about you and against one man, but still it means so much, particularly for older women who survive sexual assault and how they're dismissed, they're ignored, they're demonized. You know, there's a lot here. It's, you know, this is a hilarious book. It's an incredible historic document, but also this means a lot to a lot of people.
Thank you, Dave. That was wonderful. That means a lot. That means a lot. Thank you. Thank you.
So did y'all make that decision deliberately in the trial that this is had to be not a, you're not all women, all sexual assault. This is one woman dealing with her single sexual assault. Why was that important, Robbie?
Well, that's the only way you can try a case. The way cases work, they're about the individual parties to the case. And we certainly, E.G. and I certainly had many discussions about this issue. And I kept saying, no, this trial, it may symbolically be for women everywhere, but this trial is about what happened to you.
Yeah.
Do you feel safe, Eugene Carroll? You know, Rosie O'Donnell, she moved to Ireland under the Trump presidency. There are plenty of people that are afraid to speak out.
No, I feel safe. I feel great. I love my life. I love living my life. And you can't live your life and enjoy it if you're afraid. So, no, I'm loving it.
And will they make a movie based on your book? I think it would be hilarious.
Nobody's going to go near a book on my life or a movie or anything else because they're terrified. This old guy who's running around in apricot makeup for some reason.
Yeah. And so what happens now, Eugene Carroll? You're a writer. When I read Not My Type, I think about typing. You know, like you actually typed this book. So it is your type. You're going to keep writing. You're going to keep out there. You're going to keep being outspoken. You refuse to be put away and not seen because you are an inconvenient woman.
I'm thinking of taking a turn myself. I've talked to Robbie about this. Turning it into a Broadway musical.
I think that would be great.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? I'm writing some song lyrics.
What about it's very operatic, Eugene. It's very operatic story. Good.
Yeah,
it would be. You know,
it would be.
You know,
yeah.
And I can see it now.
I can too.
Well, you could use some of the money that you have to find some up-and-coming lyricist and work with you on that. Yeah.
Well, I want to write all the lyrics, and I want to write all the... this is how little I know about Broadway shows. This is... Really.
Yeah. I think it'd be wonderful. We're out of time, but I want to thank you both, Eugene Carroll and Roberta Kaplan. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming on The Source today and talking to us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.